What's up out there, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another edition of the Raw Deal Podcast right here on Gurick.net, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. This is your Hell in a Cell pay-per-view review. I am the host, Frank D., but I'm not alone. I got my tag team partner, Mr. Adley Green. What's going on, big man?
Same old, just enjoyed Hell in a Cell live on the WWE Network, and I didn't expect much, but I got a lot more than I was expecting. I can't wait to take a deep dive and go over the show with you.
Yeah, we definitely got our $9.99's worth, I tell you that much. But before we get into Hell in a Cell, I want to mention right now you can go to www.gerweck.net, Gurick.net, audio section. Check out our interview we did last week with Teddy Long. He talked about Ole Anderson. He talked about Joey Maggs, Jim Powers. We delved into a lot of topics. Check it out right now at Gurick.net, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. And also a plug to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Gurick Report Podcast. Several interviews from the past that we've done up there with the likes of Vince Russo, Eric Bischoff, Teddy Long, Matt Hardy, and others. youtube.com/Gurick Report Podcast. Like and subscribe. We would definitely appreciate that. Also, send a special shout out right now to our man TV Tracks for putting up our clips up there. We definitely appreciate him as well. Now, Adley, we started off Hell in a Cell tonight with the pre-show. Now, you remember back in the day, Adley, when the pre-show actually meant something? We used to have something back in the day called the free-for-all, and that would get you to want to order the pay-per-views and get you excited about what was going to happen during the show. Not so much here. We started off this show with a 6-man tag match with the team of Neville, Dolph Ziggler, and Cesaro taking on the team of King Barrett, Rusev, and the 2015 Money in the Bank winner, Sheamus. And all I got to say about this match is it was a decent match, but it was pretty much a waste of talent.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with the match whatsoever. But again, it's a pre-show match, and the pre-show match always has that distinction of something that you really don't take seriously, especially because, as you said, they don't do anything with it to build to the actual pay-per-view or to at least get you to want to spend your $9.99 to watch the show. And again, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the actual match. The last 5 minutes of the match, the action really picked up. And of course, at the end, Neville pinned Barrett with the red arrow for the 1-2-3.
Yeah, that red arrow is just fucking awesome. It really is. Give this match here. What do we rate this match here? We're gonna rate this 3 stars.
I'd give it 3 stars for sure.
All right, 3 stars. We rated that match 3 stars. Now, if you disagree with that, hey, feel free to leave your comments below. Just let us know what you think here at Gurick.net. We start off the actual Hell in a Cell pay per view with the John Cena U.S. Open Challenge, and John Cena came out, you know, polarizing, as they like to say, with a lot of the crowd singing John Cena sucks. I honestly think now, Adley, that the people just sing John Cena sucks because it's the cool thing to do, but I really don't think people think this guy sucks. I think that, you know, they're bored with him, but I don't think he sucks.
I completely agree because it's one of those chants. It's kind of like Kurt Angle, where they, to the tune of his music, you suck, you suck. People didn't really think Kurt Angle sucked. They just liked the chant because it was something fun to do. And now with the John Cena sucks, it's the same thing. It's just a fun chant to do. If you mean, if John Cena is not your cup of tea, then okay, that's great. But if you think John Cena sucks, then I tend to disagree with you.
John Cena came out there and got on a mic, cut a promo talking about, you know, whoever wants some, come get some. Out comes a guy, Adley, that we have not seen in a while. Zeb Coulter came out on a motorized scooter, and he was cutting a promo about how, you know, it's time for all different races to unite. It's time for people to come together. And he said that he was going to introduce now the next United States champion. And he introduced a guy who I was actually surprised to see. I mean, there had been rumblings lately that there might be some interest in bringing this guy back because WWE was looking for their next big Latin superstar, and out walks Alberto Del Rio to a very positive reaction from the Staples Center crowd. And I got to tell you, Adley, I was sure as shit shocked to see Alberto Del Rio. I thought the guy was the AAA champion. I thought he was working with Lucha Underground. And my God, the guy is back, and he is the new United States heavyweight champion.
Well, according to a lot of websites, Alberto Del Rio is still currently the AAA World Heavyweight Champion. He was booked to be on a lot of their upcoming shows, one of their big shows included. So it's definitely going to put it's definitely going to take some of the steam out of those shows. So he's probably going to be stripped of that championship. But yeah, I didn't see this coming. I mean, when Zeb Coulter came out, we haven't seen him in a while. I thought for sure Jack Swagger was going to come out. Maybe this was the beginning of a push, of a renewed push for Jack Swagger. But of course, it was Del Rio. He was actually a lot more muscular this time, if you notice. He was a lot bigger than he usually is. And of course, we all know why he left the company the first time. But his reemergence in WWE here is just, it just says one thing. Money talks.
That's right. I mean, we've heard the rumor that Triple H said, you know, we're going to let you go for about 6 months, and then, you know, we'll bring you back when everything has calmed down. I mean, Del Rio, in my opinion, never should have been fired to begin with. But nonetheless, they brought the guy back. He's back. He's a lot muscular, as you said. Alberto Del Rio looked, you know, pretty good tonight. My only problem I have with this is that it seems to me that with all the current guys they have on the roster that could have stepped up and accepted that challenge, I mean, they just recently brought Tyler Breeze up to SmackDown on Thursday, and he could have been the one to maybe answer that challenge and gave this guy the rub, and then run with the U.S. Championship. But they bring in Alberto Del Rio, and, you know, it's cool to see Del Rio back there, but it's kind of like, you know, a retread. We've been there and done that. And, I mean, I don't know how big they expect Del Rio to get this time around. I mean, a lot of people thought that Del Rio was, quite frankly, boring his last run.
I think near the end of his last run, he definitely was boring. It was almost kind of like the Dudley Boys during the end of their first run with WWE. You just really had no idea what to do with him. And plus, when they brought Del Rio back to go over on John Cena this evening, which we'll get into the match momentarily, but it almost kind of felt like, as you said, not only just a retread, but it almost felt like it was kind of beneath him, because the guy's multiple-time world champion. He's been in big angles, and you bring him back his first night with the U.S. to win the U.S. title. Granted, he beats John Cena clean, so that's making a very big statement. But if the rumors are true that they brought him back to be the big Latin star, you know, they started off good, but the question is, how do they follow up?
You know, my thing is this. The United States Championship is the number one belt in the company, okay? I don't give a damn if Seth Rollins is the world champion. John Cena is the man. That U.S. Championship belt means a hell of a lot more than the world title match, or the world title belt, I should say. So, nonetheless, it was a very good match between these two. I mean, Del Rio and Cena always had good chemistry and good storytelling in the ring. This match was damn good. And Del Rio beat Cena with a backstabber into a sidekick to the side of Cena's head, which nobody in the crowd expected the match to end just like that. I mean, I think they thought it was going to go a little bit longer, but nonetheless, Alberto Del Rio is the new United States Heavyweight Champion.
And if you noticed, Frank D, when he came out initially and Zeb Coulter introduced him, they played his heel music. And
right.
Then when he won, they played his babyface music. So I'm not sure if that was an accident by the sound guy or that was by design. So that makes me wonder if they even know if they're going to position him as a heel babyface going forward.
I did notice that. Me, personally, though, I think it would be in their best interest to basically make Del Rio probably a babyface at this point. Because I think that when you get to the point where he's going to go up against Seth Rollins, eventually it's going to happen, that's going to be a five-star match.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, Zeb Coulter came out and said that it's time for all the races to get together, bridging the gap, if you will, and he brings up Del Rio. And, of course, that means a lot coming from Coulter, considering his previous gimmick was the American gimmick, Americans only, you know? So
right.
That tells you his character's kind of evolved. Hopefully they build upon that more and more as the episodes of Raw unfold in the weeks to come. But I think Del Rio versus Seth Rollins is a money match.
Absolutely, and I can't wait to see it. And I'm going to go ahead and give this match here 4.5 stars with Del Rio and Cena.
Agreed.
After this match, we saw a backstage promo with the Authority, and they were talking about, whatever they were talking about, Del Rio saying, hey, you know, it's good to see Del Rio back, and that's how you make an impact, that's how you start, whatever. In walks Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is talking about, corporate Kane, and after the match is over tonight, corporate Kane is going to be out of a job. Kane walks in, and they have pretty much a stare down, and Kane says, good luck tonight, because you're going to need it, something to that effect, and that segment's over. They actually showed that. They actually took a wide shot in the arena, like they do, to watch people watching the promo, and nobody was watching the promo. And they quickly cut back to the backstage area.
I mean, that's the problem when you got the whole Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, and Seth Rollins dynamic. You pretty much know what you're going to get. Stephanie McMahon and Triple H are the parents, or the mom and dad. You know, Kane's Kane, and then Seth Rollins is, unfortunately, he has to portray the whiny brat that always cries until he gets his way. And after you see that, time, you kind of just tune out.
Yeah, and I definitely tuned out. Which took us to our first Hell in a Cell match of the night. It was the new face of fear, supposedly, Bray Wyatt, taking on Roman Reigns. And Roman Reigns came out tonight to a very, you know, positive reaction. I thought these two guys had a very, very good match for the constraints that they were dealing with out there as far as no blood and not really a lot of violence in the match. I mean, it was pretty much your standard cage match with some tables in it. It's what I saw in some kendo sticks. I mean, they utilized the environment that they had to deal with. But nonetheless, they went out there. And I think that this might have been Roman Reigns' best match to date so far. But Bray Wyatt on the losing end again of a big money match. And I don't know what to say about that. I mean, you know, we're going to go deeper into this situation here that what happened to end the pay-per-view tonight. But, you know, if you're trying to establish Bray Wyatt to do something else with someone else, why the hell would you have the guy lose?
No, I couldn't agree with you more on that aspect, but when you're looking at Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns going at it, you know the company's objective. You know WWE is still hoping that they have a second chance to make a first impression with Roman Reigns. They want him to be the new poster boy. They want him to be the WWE champion. They want him to have that big WrestleMania moment where he's holding the belt up high at the end of the night. And as you said, Frank D, this is Roman Reigns' best performance in quite some time. And on top of that, when you look at these two going at it in the ring, move for move, hold for hold, there were quite a few times in this match where Roman Reigns had the audience. There were times where he lost them, they started booing him, but they also were again times that he had them. And I think WWE officials who are kind of plotting and tracking the course for Roman Reigns need to be very happy with what they saw tonight.
Yeah, but did you hear the crowd chanting, "Let's go Roman, Roman sucks." And a "Let's go Roman" chant was from the women and children, and the "Roman sucks" chants were coming from the males.
Oh, yeah, Roman Reigns is definitely never going to have the entire audience the palm of his hat. And it's a possibility, Frank D, that that day is done. I mean, it's a possibility that the days of having the baby face that everyone loves is over. I mean, Hogan, Rock, Austin, you know, I think those days just might be over because now everybody looks at WWE and all forms of entertainment with a different lens. They look through it as a different lens, and it's clear who the company wants as number one guy, and then it's clear who the fans want as number one guy, and usually those two things don't connect. So when you're pushing a guy, you know, there are those fans who are just going to buy everything Vince McMahon's going to sell you, and then there's going to be those fans that say, no, you're telling me who I want to like, but I'm not going to like that guy.
Yeah, and one of the big spots in this match happened when Roman Reigns speared Bray Wyatt through a table on the outside. And that was a pretty good spot right there. It was pretty scary, but it's good nonetheless.
Oh, no, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, that table spot was sick, no doubt about it. And talking about Bray Wyatt losing, you know, he loses a lot of the big matches. In fact, he loses pretty much every big match, but I think that speaks to the resilience of the character because I think the character is so interesting to a lot of people that he can get away with losing more often than most. Like, I think a guy like Cesaro and Kofi Kingston and Adrian Neville, those guys really can't afford to lose too often in a main event scenario or in a big-time scenario, but I think Bray Wyatt can afford to lose more often than not. And we'll talk about it more later, but I got to give them props to not only for the match, but the way they sold the match, the way they sold the effects of the match as well.
Yeah. I think we're both in agreement here. We're going to give this one here 3.5 stars.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so 3.5 stars on the first Hell in a Cell match of the night, which takes us down to the WWE Tag Team Championships. We had The New Day versus the Dudley Boys. And, you know, Adley, the Dudley Boys have been back for maybe, you know, a month or two. But I feel like I've seen this match over and over and over again already.
Well, that's,
and quite honestly, I'm tired of it.
Well, that's because you saw it on Monday Night Raw, you saw it at Night of Champions, you saw it at the MSG special, and you saw it again tonight. And I think that new car smell has worn off the Dudleys. I mean, they've lost three or four times. That's the New Day. And one thing I point out too is the New Day was still over with the crowd, even without the assistance of the X-Man himself, Xavier Woods. So that told So that told you a lot right there, that how much Kofi Kingston and Big E bring to the table. But the match itself, like, nothing to complain about at all. I mean, I didn't have a problem with the match whatsoever as far as bell to bell. But again, the Dudley Boyz lose to the New Day, and I'll just be roll my eyes if I hear one more time Dudley's get a tag title shot. I mean, you have a bunch of other tag teams, and I think it's time to use somebody else.
Yeah, what do you think about that botch that happened with the Dudley Boyz tonight?
You know, I think that really speaks to the generational gap between the Dudley Boyz and the New Day. And what I mean by that is the Dudley Boyz, you know, they're from a different era. But now when you're in this performance center era, if you will, where everything is, you know, more athletic, you know, more high-paced, fast-paced, if you will. And, of course, I think the Dudley Boyz should have a hard time keeping up with that. Not because they're old, per se, not because they're slower, they just can't hang anymore. But I think they're just two different styles that, in certain aspects of the match, they're not going to gel.
As we were talking about offline, I think on the mic, going back and forth on promo ability, I think the New Day and the Dudley Boyz are pretty good. But as far as in-ring chemistry, I just don't think they have it. And I kind of think they need to separate these teams now at this point. I thought if they were going to put the championship belts on the Dudley Boyz, personally, it should happen at the MSG Special when they were in New York. That's when they should have done it. And if they didn't do it then, tonight was probably their last time doing it. And I think that at this point we need to move on to another tag team for New Day. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, who else do they have? I mean, that's the problem right now. I mean, I'm saying, you know, a new tag team, but it's like, unless you call up somebody from NXT, I don't know who the hell else they can go against.
I mean, here's the thing. You got the Survivor Series coming up, and you have the classic tag team, the classic Survivor Series tag team format. So you have 1 month where you don't even have to worry about putting the tag team titles on the line. And you can maybe go do a throwback of the first two Survivor Series matches where you have literally five tag teams on the heel side and five tags on the baby side. If you go to the WWE roster and look at NXT, I think you might be able to pull something like that off.
Yeah, I'm all for that. I would like to see Survivor Series at least one time, you know, go back to like it was back in 87 and 88, you know what I mean? I definitely would like to see that. But nonetheless, I don't think we're going to.
Oh, no, we're not. But a guy can dream. A guy can dream.
Exactly. A guy can dream, or you can watch it on the WWE Network. Going next, the WWE Divas Championship, we saw the champion Charlotte take on Nikki Bella. And I actually thought that, for the most part, this was probably Nikki Bella's best match to date.
I think this was actually one of the best Divas matches we've had in a little bit now, as far as WWE TV is concerned, not counting, you know, NXT. And one of the stipulation in this match is that everyone was banned from ringside. No Becky Lynch, no Paige, no Brie Bella, no Alicia Fox. And usually when those six ladies are out in the ring, the match inside the ring usually counts on interference in some way, shape, or form. So you didn't have that this time, and I was really concerned this match might suffer from the lack of shenanigans and interference, but I was completely wrong. These two ladies did it and did it in style. I mean, I love the end of the match where Nikki Bella hit the Alabama Slam to Charlotte on the ring apron.
Yeah, that was pretty unexpected.
And I also love the selling where Nikki Bella's working on the back of Charlotte, and then Charlotte tries to go for the figure eight, but she can't bridge all the way because her back was hurting. So I think I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So what do we rate this match tonight? Are we going to give this one 3.5 stars?
I go with 3.5 stars, Frank D. Absolutely. And, of course, right after the match, Paige and Becky Lynch ran out to congratulate Charlotte on her win, but Paige was kind of being, you know, a little snub because she never let Becky Lynch get in there to raise her hand. She always had to be the first one to hug her, the first one to raise her hand. So that tells you that Paige's heel turn is probably still in the works.
Yeah, I'm not feeling Paige. I don't really give a damn if she's a babyface or if she's a heel or if she's not there. I couldn't care less.
I'm with you on that. At first, I was digging Paige, the character, digging Paige, the wrestler, but there's, and again, yeah, I don't like to judge a book by its cover. I mean, I don't know her, but there is something about her that just really has turned me off to the character. And
could it be all the shit that she was talking when she was on that Tough Enough show?
I think that's part of it because she was just concerned with talking trash more than actually critiquing people. Because every single time she's on Tough Enough and she's talking people down, I'm telling myself, like, okay, why don't you tell them what they haven't done wrong? Why don't you tell them what they're doing that's good? And she would, 1 minute she would yell at somebody for, you know, kind of staying in the background, not causing enough drama. Then they cause drama, and she'd go, now you're being fake. They make up your damn mind.
Yeah, I'm not feeling Paige. I never really have. I always thought that she was somewhat overrated. And I'm glad that we have the boss, Sasha Banks, up there. And, you know, the L.A. crowd tonight, man, they were chanting for the boss during that match. So.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, I think WWE Universe knows that Sasha Banks is the number one wrestler in that company. It's only a matter of time before they put the belt on her.
Yeah, but I can't wait for that. I'll be cheering for that one.
Frankie, this is the Raw deal, yeah. So I'm gonna ask you straight up, all right?
Go ahead.
Is Paige a hoe?
Why do you think she's a hoe?
I don't know. Like, I just, there's something about her I really don't like.
Well, you know what, man? Honestly, if she is a hoe, she's not really showing too much of that on WWE television. Although, if you go back to the Stone Cold podcast.
Oh, my God. I think, yes.
She was on there. When she was on there and she kept trying to, you know, show her tits and all that to Austin a little bit, I think that's where you might think that she's a hoe.
Yeah, you're right. I think you're right.
I don't think she's a hoe.
I could be wrong, but she was definitely just a fangirl on that show. And yeah. The first 5 minutes of that podcast, I thought, why is she here?
Well, she's there because the original guest for that podcast was supposed to have been Hulk Hogan.
Oh, no, absolutely, but I think they could have found someone else a lot better. I mean, I know they wanted to promote Tough Enough, but why her?
They could have had Sting on there or anybody.
That would be a good one.
Yeah, I think they're going to have Sting on there eventually. I think that was in the works, Sting or Taker or somebody. So, I don't know, but I don't know if she's a hoe or not. You know, she's no more of a hoe than Nikki Bella, all right? So we'll just put it to you like that. Although I have to say, I'm not a big Nikki Bella fan, but she was looking good tonight. We're going to go to the next match. It was for the Intercontinental Championship. And I tell you what, Adley, you know something? When I was talking about the, you know, building back the Intercontinental Championship and the prestige of the IC belt, this is not what I was talking about. Because you have Ryback come out tonight to no reaction. And, some of the shit that Ryback was doing in that ring tonight against Kevin Owens, who came out to a pop from the L.A. crowd tonight, I guess L.A. loves Kevin Owens, obviously. Ryback in this match tonight kind of reminded me of the Ultimate Warrior with some of his power moves.
Oh, certainly. It was the Ultimate Warrior without the charisma. I mean, when you look at Ryback, I just think that guy is too big. That guy is too muscular. I mean, it just seems like he gets bigger and bigger every single time you see him. And as far as this match goes, this match is about 5 minutes at the most, including the entrances. And this was the Kevin Owens show. The Los Angeles crowd absolutely loved him. It didn't matter who he was going to be in the ring with. It was all about Kevin Owens. And Michael Cole on commentary, you know, still just trying to throw jabs at Kevin Owens every single chance he gets. I mean, then maybe Kevin Dunn in the production truck tell him to say this. Because if you remember, during the match, Michael Cole said, oh, Kevin Owens is billed at 266 pounds. And then he goes, yeah, you know he weighs more than that. I'm thinking, like, why? You're trying to push this guy as one of your villains, and yet you're making fun of him. What's the deal?
Yeah, I don't get that. And, you know, a lot of people out there were talking about the whole weight thing, and it's not a big deal and whatever. Well, you know what? It actually is a big deal because you have people watching the damn show, and sometimes they actually do listen to the commentary. They're sitting up there talking about this guy's weight, and somebody says, oh, look at that fat bastard right there, Kevin Owens. Then people are going to think that, and they're going to start saying, oh, look at that fat bastard Kevin Owens, which basically means, Atlee, that they won't take him seriously as a champion. They're just going to rely on him being that fat bastard. But you know something? If they want to bring up Kevin Owens' weight, next time, bring up Bray Wyatt's weight as well.
Oh, I agree with you, absolutely, because the last thing you need is for Kevin Owens to get the Bull Dempsey treatment. If you watch NXT, Bull Dempsey, they're making him lose weight, like on TV. That's his gimmick. He's trying to lose weight, and every single time he's on the treadmill or in the gym, he happens to come about a package of M&Ms or a bag of chips, and he has to make the decision as to whether or not he keeps working out or eats the M&Ms. And I just hope that's not what they do to Kevin Owens.
I totally agree with you. And we're going to talk about the last two matches. I know, you know, we skipped over a match here, but that was done on purpose. Because the final two matches here, and this is the way it should have gone, but they didn't do it this way. The next match here was for the WWE Championship. And it was Challenger Kane versus the champion Seth Rollins, with the stipulation that if Kane lost the match tonight, Corporate Kane would be fired. And I have to tell you right now, the match was decent for what it was, but I think we both can agree, and people out there listening to the Raw deal can agree, that I think Kane's age is finally starting to come up to him.
It definitely showed in this match for sure, because he was slow as molasses. I mean, just all the times he ran across the ring, ran off the ropes, climbed the ropes, he was slow as can be, and it really showed. Now, also, this event symbolizes Kane's 18th year in the WWE. I mean, if you want to get technical, he's been in WWE a little bit longer from his days as Isaac Yankum DDS and the fake Diesel, but as Kane consistently 18 years, I mean, that's a hell of a feat.
That's a hell of an accomplishment. Yeah, 18 years. You know, we've been watching Kane, and I've been watching him a little bit longer than that because, like you just mentioned, the you know, Isaac Yankum DDS, and then he was the fake Diesel, you know? So I remember all that shit, and it's like, wow, 18 years, man. That's crazy.
And it was just kind of funny because the symbolism was, remember, it was Bad Blood 1997 in October. He interfered in the legendary Hell in a Cell match between The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, ripped the door right off the hinges, Tombstone Undertaker, Shawn Michaels got the win, and then 18 years later, he's wrestling Seth Rollins for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship as the Hell in a Cell hangs above them. So I thought it was kind of a cool moment.
Yeah, it was a cool moment, but this is just not my favorite incarnation of Kane at all. I mean, I would have definitely loved to have seen, as I've stated before many times here on Raw Deal and the GRP, I would have definitely loved to have seen Retro Kane come out there. But nonetheless, after a flurry of knees from the top rope, frog splash, powerbomb through a table, and finally the pedigree, Seth Rollins retains the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, leaving Kane in the ring. And Corporate Kane is now fired from his duties. And I guess we're going to find out moving forward what they're going to do with Kane.
Now, I'm glad that they gave Seth Rollins the clean win, because if you're trying to push, if he's your champion, you have to give him a clean win sometime. And even though some people might say, I mean, you and I were talking about this off the air, that in many ways it's not believable for Seth Rollins, somebody his size, to beat Kane straight up, but again, I do like the fact they gave him a clean win, because he got a clean win over Sting, and now a champion, so now he's still the clean win over Kane, so that's two in a row for him. And Frank, in your opinion, do they just kill the general manager position that they have for Kane, the director of operations, do they kill that gimmick, or did they put somebody else in that position now that Kane's been fired, if you will?
I think, honestly, that should be the end nail for the director of operations. I don't think we need a director of operations. When you have Triple H and Stephanie there as the authority, there ain't no reason to have a director of operations. Which leads us to the main event of the evening, what we all wanted to see. Well, not really, because when we originally found out about this match, I wasn't too high on it. Because, you know what, I saw this match years ago. It was at No Mercy. If you remember that one. And it was the Biker Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar. And that match was a bloody brawl. And we're going to talk about the one that happened tonight. Because once again, in Hell in a Cell, it was going to be the final nail in the coffin for this particular feud. It was done. We all thought that we were going to get this match at WrestleMania next year. Vince McMahon said, nope, we're going to take Undertaker and Brock Lesnar into new directions. So we're going to end up and we're going to end this feud here at Hell in a Cell in October in L.A., and they did it tonight. The Undertaker, the Phenom, taking on the Beast Incarnate, Brock Lesnar. And I got to tell you, Adley, I really enjoyed the hell out of this match.
Oh, this match was great from bell to bell. And I think that this match is the perfect definition of what the main event is supposed to represent, because Brock Lesnar and Undertaker are stars in every sense of the word. They are superstars. And when you look at them compared to everybody else on the WWE roster, these guys are head and shoulders above the rest, because the fans in the Staples Center were louder for this match than any other match, and they were into this match for the entire time. I mean, Lesnar and Taker had the audience in the palm of their hand. And just the way they perform, just the way they do their moves, with their timing, everything just is just, they're superstars in every sense of the word. They really are.
Yeah, this match was great. It really showed you that, you know, like we were talking offline, you know, that WWE at some point in this feud went to position Undertaker as a heel. And in some spots they did boo Taker, but nobody's going to boo Taker at this point. And really, people love Brock Lesnar, so they're not going to boo him either. So they made it neutral. And this was more of a respect type of situation here. It was more of a passive torch situation, as we were talking about how, you know, Undertaker for years and years and years, he was the standard bearer as far as, you know, dominance in the WWE, WWF, and now Brock Lesnar is that standard bearer now. And the Undertaker, you know, lost tonight, and it was, nonetheless, it was a damn good match, and they actually used some blood. And you know what? This match needed blood. If you're going to have a war out there of attrition that these two guys were going into, and this was going to be the final battle, and this is going to be the last time that you see Brock Lesnar versus Undertaker, then that's the way it needed to be done, and I'm glad that they allowed the blood. I'm not sure if Vince McMahon was too happy about that, but nonetheless, it made for a better match. Because sometimes when you're dealing with these Hell in a Cell matches or cage matches, you got to have some blood. But the only problem I had with it tonight was when the damn doctor came in there, in the middle of a Hell in a Cell match, Ellie. The middle of a Hell in a Cell match to go in there and wipe the damn blood. You do not do that. I don't give a damn if there's a no blood policy or whatever the situation may be. This is Hell in a freaking Cell. You don't stop a Hell in a Cell match for blood.
It's interesting because Charlotte was bleeding from her nose during the Divas title match, and the doctor didn't come out once. And then the doctor came in a Hell in a Cell match, of all places, and started wiping the blood. And he ended up being the most hated guy in the building, and Brock Lesnar got a big pop when he threw the doctor out of the ring. Of course, it happened during the instant replay, so it was hard to see for the audience watching at home. But yeah, I agree with you. You let Hell in the Cell speak for itself. No doctors. Just get the referee in there. Let these two warriors do what they're paid to do and let the story just unfold before our very eyes. That's what they need to do. And of course, there have been stories in the past where Vince McMahon wanted to tone down the product for the sake of ratings and for the sake of ratings and also the sake of sponsors. So he would say don't do as many chair shots, don't do as many tables, and definitely no blood. Whatever you do, no blood. But at the same time, he would kind of be sneaky. There were reports that he would call for blood, and then when the sponsors would get mad at him, he would just say, oh, those guys just got carried away. I'm sorry about that, even though he made the call for there to be blood. So I think maybe something like that happened in this match too.
Yeah, I'm not expecting Undertaker or Brock Lesnar to be fine for bleeding.
No way.
Yeah, I'm not expecting that to happen. But Taker, you know, Brock Lesnar got the win here. They actually did a unique spot with the, you know, pulling up the ring mat. Brock Lesnar did, exposing the floorboards of the ring. And yeah, that was kind of like, I don't necessarily know how I feel about that when it's kind of really exposing the business even more. That, you know, those pads are there for people who may not know how the ring is constructed.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that too, because, I mean, it was a great visual at first with Brock ripping the canvas, but then you see the styrofoam at first, and you're like, oh man, like, that really just exposed it, because a lot of people don't know what that ring's constructed of. So they rip the styrofoam off, and then you put the wood there, and then Jerry Lawler tries to save it by going, if you've ever wanted to know what a ring was made of, there you go, just metal and wood. And I go, oh, you forgot the styrofoam, the big piece of styrofoam that Lesnar just threw out of the ring. And as a guy that, myself, that's put together many a rings over the years, that I cringed a little bit when Brock just carried that giant piece of styrofoam and threw it out of the ring. I just like, oh, why?
Yeah, I don't know. I saw a sign tonight. It was funny. There was a sign in the audience that said "Kayfabe is dead." It was there like all night. Somebody had it up there, and that's I kind of cringed at that one myself, because I'm like I am. You know, even though I'm not a worker, I'm not a wrestler. You know, I'm just a fan. But I actually have gotten in the ring and taken some bumps when I was, you know, trying to do wrestling school or whatever. And that damn mat hurts. That ring hurts. So I kind of still try to protect the business a little bit. I don't like to expose the business to people who may not be up on things, you know, trying to keep a, you know, a little bit of kayfabe. So when I saw that tonight with Brock, you know, ripping the ring up, I was like, damn, man, that's really showing these people, like, what's up, you know, and it really kind of kills the illusion a little bit.
It does, because, as you said, when you take a bump on that ring, even with the styrofoam, it hurts. There's no doubt about it. It definitely hurts, speaking from experience. But again, when somebody's not in the know and all they see is that giant white piece of styrofoam, they're just going to think, man, that's what they're landing on? That doesn't hurt. And when in reality, it does. And you say about kayfabe being broke with that sign. Well, tonight, as far as tearing that ring apart goes, they shot kayfabe in the head at point-blank range.
Yeah, it really is. Kayfabe is done. Nonetheless, Undertaker was out there, you know, raising himself up. He was, you know, soaking in the adulation of the Staples Center crowd, who gave him a very respectful ovation, saying, "Thank you, Taker." It was really a cool sight. And all of a sudden, the Wyatt family flicker happened on the screen, and out comes all four members of the Wyatt family. I gotta tell you right now, though, man, the sight of the Wyatt family now with four members, that is a hell of a damn look.
I agree with you. What makes it even scarier is that when they come to the ring and the lights go off and they have the flashlights of the audience, the fireflies, if that's what Bray Wyatt calls them, I love that Braun Strowman wears the black sheep's mask because you don't see him until there's camera flashes to pick him up. It's almost like there's a ghost following Bray Wyatt. I just love the visual look.
Yeah, and I'm just glad, too, that they brought Eric Rowan back into the fold there as well. You know, the black sheep, and then you have the white sheep, and then you have, you know, Luke Harper there. I mean, I just think that it's pretty cool to have four members of the Wyatt family. That's actually a pretty cool thing. And that actually could lead, because we saw The Undertaker get a huge beatdown tonight, and then they carried him out. Now, I don't know if they're going to, you know, if they're going to convert Undertaker into a Wyatt family member, or, you know, if they're going to go, since WWE was advertising tonight that the 25th anniversary of The Undertaker is going to happen at the Survivor Series next month in Atlanta, and they're going to be celebrating that. This could be the Wyatt family versus Undertaker and, you know, three partners of his choice. Could be Undertaker with Kane, Roman Reigns, and Dean Ambrose taking on the Wyatt family, or it could be Undertaker versus Bray Wyatt one-on-one. We don't know yet, but nonetheless, I'm very interested and intrigued as to where they're going with this.
Oh, I am too, and I really hope they end up doing the traditional Survivor Series match between these two, because as much as you might want to see Bray Wyatt and Taker go at it, we already saw it at WrestleMania, and I think if you just put them in an environment where you can get the entire Wyatt family in the match, and also I think the three guys you named, Kane, Roman Reigns, and Dean Ambrose, those are the best guys I think to put in the corner of the Undertaker in a Survivor Series match. But also, I want to know what's going to happen, because remember at SummerSlam a couple of years ago, when Bray Wyatt defeated Kane in the Inferno match, they carried Kane back to the locker room, and we were wondering what that was going to lead to, and of course it really didn't lead to anything but Kane coming back. Now, they just carried the same thing. They carried the Undertaker back to the locker room, and I wonder if they're going to do something where, do they kidnap the Undertaker? Is he held hostage? Is he just disappear mysteriously until Survivor Series? I mean, what are they going to do?
Yeah, I'm curious, man. I really want to see this because, you know, last time we saw somebody, you know, join the Wyatt family, it was Daniel Bryan. And apparently that was supposed to go a lot longer than what it did. And unfortunately, you know, it didn't happen. With the Undertaker, though, I don't know, man. I mean, the last time I saw Taker get carried off like that, that's when Paul Bearer had turned on. Remember that? SummerSlam 96.
SummerSlam 96, Boiler Room Brawl. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know where they're going to go with this one. But my only problem with it is that we had just saw Bray Wyatt earlier on in the Hell in a Cell match with Roman Reigns, in which he lost. And all of a sudden, now he comes back out, not really selling the effects of that Hell in a Cell match, and beating down The Undertaker.
Oh, no, I feel you on that. I mean, it's got to take some wind out of the wings of Bray Wyatt, because he just lost this big match, and now he's transitioning to a feud with the Undertaker, which is probably going to culminate at Survivor Series. But I think to most casual fans, you know, that don't follow the IWC, I think what happened was as soon as Bray Wyatt came out of the Wyatt family and just beat down the Undertaker, I think they forgot about that. Of course, you and I aren't going to forget about that, but I think a lot of fans, the memory of Bray Wyatt losing was erased, because the last thing you saw tonight was Bray Wyatt ordering his family to carry out the Undertaker. That was the last thing you saw.
Right. And also want to mention real quick, too, there was a backstage segment there with Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns, in which Dean Ambrose was talking about, you know what's next. And Roman Reigns says, we'll talk about that tomorrow night on Raw. So the speculation is, what does he mean, you know what's next? Does he mean that he's going for the championship at some point? I mean, what do you think they're going to go with that?
It's interesting, because at the end of that, too, Dean Ambrose said, you know, maybe I'm going to cause a little hell of my own tonight. So I thought maybe he might be interfering in the main event in some capacity. Clearly that didn't happen, but it's going to be interesting to see if Roman Reigns is going to go for the title, because I don't think they're going to put Seth Rollins in a traditional Survivor Series match. I think they want to have some form of a WWE Championship match at the Survivor Series. So it could, you could do Rollins versus Roman Reigns. And then if that is what happens, then the question is, for our prediction, who's that fourth tag team partner? Because they'll still probably do Dean Ambrose and Kane, but who's that fourth guy? It'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds.
Yeah, and you know, originally, you know, Adley and I, we were going to give this match here 5 stars. But after thinking about it a little bit, I'm going to have to go with, you know, maybe 4.5. And the reason why I'm going with 4.5 stars in this Hell in a Cell match, and this is just, this is, you know, my view on it. I think that that low blow really hurt the match. Because we had just saw that at SummerSlam, so it really wasn't a clean finish. Although it's, you know, it's no disqualifications in Hell in a Cell. But nonetheless, I wouldn't expect a guy with the power, the force, the beast incarnate Brock Lesnar to have to resort to using a low blow to beat The Undertaker.
You know, normally I would have a problem with it, but I didn't have a problem with it because, number one, it's Hell in a Cell, no rules, anything goes. So I really don't mind if people cheat to win a match when it comes to no DQ stipulations. But also, I think Michael Cole really referred to the symbolism of the match as it was kind of payback. That was the story they were trying to tell. It was Lesnar getting payback on Undertaker for doing the same thing to him 2 months earlier. So I can see how somebody would have, how you'd have a problem with it, but it really didn't have, I really didn't have a problem with it because I understood the story they were trying to tell with
him. Yeah, I mean, I get that whole symbolism thing. And like, oh, you know, he did it to Taker did it to him, so now he gets it back. You know, he gets Taker back in the nuts. But, I mean, even Undertaker should never have done that.
Well, let me ask you a question, Frank D. Speaking of,
yeah,
like, we were talking about Bray Wyatt, like, it's kind of takes some wind out of his wings because he lost to Roman Reigns, and now he's in a big feud with Undertaker. The fact that they're pushing Survivor Series around the Undertaker being his 25th anniversary, do you think it takes some luster out of it now that he lost this match?
I don't think so.
Neither do I.
I mean, Taker can bounce back from that. I mean, people would have thought that Sting losing to Triple H at WrestleMania would have taken some wind out of his sails, and it really didn't. When he came back to wrestle Seth Rollins, I mean, that was a pretty good build-up to their feud. Although some of us wish we could have saw the darker Crow scene that we saw in WCW, but nonetheless, I don't think it's going to do anything. I think that actually it's going to be more intriguing heading into Survivor Series, but it's going to be the Undertaker celebration pretty much.
I agree, 100%.
All right, so Adley, where do we rate Hell in a Cell tonight? I mean, do we give this a 1 star, 2 star, 3 star, 4 star, or do we say this event is 5 stars?
If you want to rate the entire event, I would give this 3.5 to 4 stars, or maybe 3. I'm going to say 3.75, because even though there was nothing monumental that really happened, this was a one match show. I mean, this show was hyped around one match and one match only: The Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar, and it delivered on all fronts. And plus, the show itself, even though there's, again, nothing monumental, it was a lot better than we expected considering the weak build-up on Raw over the last 4 weeks.
Yeah, I'm going to have to give this show 3 stars. I thought it was average at best. I mean, you know, honestly, it was a Monday Night Raw episode with a damn cell hanging over it. That's how I looked at it. But I think that Taker and Lesnar was probably the best thing that we saw all night. And, you know, it's a shame that this feud has to end. We would have wanted to see the culmination at WrestleMania next year. But, you know, nonetheless, it is what it is. I think that for $9.99, I got my money's worth.
Well, Frank D., that's the big question now. What is on tap for WrestleMania? Because they clearly aren't going to do Lesnar versus Taker 4.
No, I don't know what's on tap for WrestleMania next year. Honestly, I don't. I wasn't expecting Alberto Del Rio to be back in the fold, but nonetheless, I don't think he has any, you know, thing to do with the bigger plan that they got going for him. I think that we're going to see maybe Roman Reigns in that main event next year again.
I mean, smart money says yes, because again, you know, the company wants him to be the flag bearer, if you will.
Right. But we don't know anything about, you know, where they're going to go with WrestleMania until we at least get to the Royal Rumble. And before we get to the Royal Rumble, the next stop is going to be Survivor Series. So we're looking at Survivor Series, looking to see where they're going to go with that win. The 25th anniversary of The Undertaker. I can't believe we've been watching this guy for 25 years and still going.
25 years. It is amazing. I mean, think about it. I mean, the guy debuted in 1990. in the Classic Survivor Series match as the mystery partner of Ted DiBiase, and then a year later at Survivor Series 1991, the man defeated Hulk Hogan for the WWE Championship. I mean, back then, you know, winning the world title after just 1 year in the company was unheard of. So that just tells you, it speaks to the talent of The Undertaker over the years.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is still going on. He's able to reinvent himself. And Taker's another one. Taker's another guy, I got to be honest with you, I'm kind of bored with as far as his current incarnation. I think, you know, I wish he would change it up a little bit and maybe change up the music a little bit. I was always partial to his 1999 theme song he did with the Ministry of Darkness. But I just wish that, you know, okay, going to the drawing board, maybe at Survivor Series, since it is the 25th anniversary, I would mark out like crazy if Undertaker was to come back wearing his original gear.
Oh, that would be amazing. The original hat, the original trench coat with the gray gloves and the gray boots, that'd be awesome.
Yep. That would be great.
And then that old music that kind of they played during Paul Bearer's Funeral Parlor episodes.
Yes.
That would be awesome. Because actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because Taker was wearing that kind of leather medieval gear in 1996, 1997, but then when he wrestled Sid for the world title at WrestleMania 13, he went back to that gear for one night, and I marked out for that. So I'm hoping maybe we see something like that come the 25th anniversary of his career at Survivor Series.
Hopefully we would see that. That would be great. And that is going to conclude this edition of the Raw Deal, our Hell in a Cell review. We hope you have enjoyed it. Abby, one more time, plug your social media for the people out there.
If you guys are on Twitter, you can follow me at @AtleyGreen. Or if you want to see some of my blogs, go to thegreenscreen.net.
All right, and also check us out, youtube.com/Gerwig Report Podcast. Like I said before, we have lots of interviews up there that we previously have done with the likes of Eric Bischoff, Vince Russo, Teddy Long, Matt Hardy, Jeff Jarrett, you name it, it's up there, youtube.com/Gerwig Report Podcast. Also, you can check out our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio, and officially at Gerwig.net. I'm Frank D for Abby Green, and we will check you out on the next edition of the Raw Deal. What's up out there? I'm Frank D, and doing a little post-production on this edition of the Raw Deal episode that you just listened to. Was on Gerwig.net getting my pro wrestling news of a day so far, and I just read that apparently some people backstage at Hell in a Cell in the gorilla position, y'all know who I'm talking about, Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn, and others, weren't too happy with the blood last night during the main event. And I think that's complete bullshit. And you know what? When WWE went out of their way to show video packages for weeks showing previous matches between Taker and Brock Lesnar, including that Hell in a Cell match that they did back in the day where they were bleeding like stuffed pigs, and have a problem with the blood usage of this match last night when it needed it, when it called for it, because this is a war of attrition, I think that, you know what? If they have a problem with blood usage, then maybe WWE at this point needs to abandon the whole Hell in a Cell concept. They shouldn't do matches like this anymore. Because sometimes when you have a cage match or a Hell in a Cell match, you got to have blood. And WWE is just not willing to do that. They're not willing to, you know, lose sponsors and all that. And I get that. It's a business. But at the same time, when you have a war like this, a match calls for blood. This is one of those matches that needed blood. And the blood made it better. What did make it better, though, was that damn doctor coming in wiping the blood away. But you know what? Nevertheless, it is what it is. So WWE should get rid of Hell in a Cell at this point. And keep doing what they do, which is that clean PC entertainment that they put on. And that's the reason why the ratings are in the shitter every single week. And the moral on this story and the rest of the wrestling news, keep it locked to www.gerwek.net. Gerwig.net. I'm Frank D. Now, catch you later.